My name is Elner Helene. I came to Moorhead about 43 years ago. Before that, I was teaching in Dilworth. I was living with a girl that taught in Dilworth by the name of Elner Stotno. We used to have a visitor that came to see us quite often. He was a local postmaster. His name was Clifford Fitzgerald. Consequently, Elner became Mrs. Clifford Fitzgerald. He would often speak of the Melby service station, and he would talk about the two brothers, Bob and Carol. Through the Fitzgeralds, I met Bob and his wife, and today I have Carol Melby with me. He's a brother of Bob. Carol, will you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you were born, and a little bit about your childhood and so forth?
Okay, I was born in Moorhead. Went through the Moorhead Public Schools, went through Concordia College. We were teenagers through the Depression years, you know, and nobody had any money, but everybody was in the same position, so I think it maybe drew the families closer together. The kids didn't have regulated entertainment. You'd make up your own teams in your neighborhoods and play your own games, and there was more visiting of families back and forth than there is today. Mm-hmm. And when grandma or grandpa got too old, they moved in with one of the kids in those days. There weren't nursing homes.
Now your father was born in Norway, wasn't he?
Dad was born in Norway, and he came over alone at the age of 14. He was a real strong personality, as my mother was. And he worked at various things. He worked in lumber camps, and he was a carpenter, and he was back when they had the fire wagon pulled by a team of horses, he was the lone paid man in the department. They lived right in the fire hall, and he trained the horses, and later on he was in some police work. He was chief of police, he was sheriff, and then in 32, he with my brother and I, started Melby Service.
Now, I thought it was interesting when you mentioned that your father, he was fire chief here in Moorhead. It was a one-man operation, and all the others were volunteers.
Right.
And he was paid $50 a month. I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah.
And then you might go on. Oh, he trained the horses. You mentioned that, didn't you?
Yeah, he trained the horses. I guess that was before my time, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And in 32, we rented a service station. Went into business, and in 33 we built our own station and became a jobber, wholesaler and retailer.
Then before that happened, you were at Concordia.
Oh yes.
And you graduated, was it in 1933?
34 from college, 30 34. From high school. In high school, as I mentioned before, I loved athletics and was active in it, and we had Glenn Hanna as our coach, who was maybe one of the most successful coaches that Moore had ever had, and one of the most successful in the state of Minnesota. And he won two state titles while I was in school, and I was lucky enough to play in one of them. And, you know, our generation was the Depression kids, and you couldn't get any job. The only job you could get in the summertime would be, you could weed onions, 10 cents an hour, 10 hours a day, and they'd give you that silver dollar at Charlie Peterson's farm, and you really had it made.
That was when you were in high school, was it?
Yes. You know, we went from the crystal radio set to what we have today, computers, and from the horse and buggy to the space age. We've really seen a lot of things in our time. Where if you had appendicitis, it was about 50-50 you would die back when I was a teenager. You know, now we have organ transplants, and so we've seen a lot of changes in my life. In college, I was lucky. That was a Frank Cleve, Louis Benson era. And we won one title in football and one in basketball at that time. And our counterpart at that time was Alex Sliv Nimzik, who was, you know, a figure in his own right here. And he was a personal friend of my dad and myself. And we spent a lot of time together. I hunted with him. Did business with each other, and
I worked with the Red Cross at Fairmont Foods. I did quite a bit of collecting for Red Cross. And I remember Alec Nemzik came up to see me, and he wrote me the nicest letter, too. He really had a fine personality.
He was a strong personality.
I thought so, too.
He was a great one. He set quite a record here at MS and municipal government, too.
Another thing that I thought was interesting, when you tell about that your tuition for one semester was $75, what is it now, I wonder?
Oh, I suppose if you... it's around $8,000 if you have board and room. Without board and room, I suppose it's about $5,500.
That's for one semester.
That's it. And back then, if two from a family went, you got a $25 discount each semester.
That's something so, good.
Yeah.
And you graduated in 34. Then what did you do?
I taught school for 3 years up at McIntosh, Minnesota. I went out for $110 a month, and that was the best paying job that any of the Concordia graduates got that year. And many of the kids went out for $75 a month, and some of them would get it in warrants, which they had a discount to get the cash. Times were really pretty short right then.
That was in 35 then, I suppose, 34, 35.
Fall of 34 till summer of 37 I taught. Then my dad passed away, and I came back home and went in partnership with my brother in the oil business. And we did business with the same company for successors for 43 years. We started out with Tidewater, and then Pure Oil bought out Tidewater, and we stayed with Pure. Then Pure was bought out by Union, and we stayed with Union. So we were with one company all our lives.
You also did some business with local people too, didn't you? Or didn't you have too much?
Oh, yes, we had ours wasn't the best location in the world. We were on 7th Street in Maine, but we had a real good local business. We weren't dependent on the tourist trade.
At first you said you rented your property, then later you built on?
We rented 1 year, and then we built the next year.
And you added
a different location, then in the late 40s we added on to the building. Rested up a little.
I thought it was interesting when you told, you said you built your house in 1938 and you dug the basement. Tell us a little bit about that.
We built in 39. I got married in December of 38. And in the spring of 39, we built at 524 South 5th. And the basement was dug by a team of horses and a shovel. You know, it's hard to believe. In fact, they just opened the street, 5th Street, past where I built, the year I built. I got part of the fill for my lawn was off the street. And before that, the cows were pastured out there. It's hard to believe, but
things have changed.
Yeah.
Then you tell about your partnership with your brother and your mother, too, I guess, wasn't it?
Yeah, after Dad died, Bob and I and my mother shared in the business, the income from it, and must have got along. We stayed together 43 years.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
And who managed it?
Well, I took care of the business end of it. Bob kind of watched over the fuel oil and backroom business.
You did.
And we both did a little of each too, so it wasn't exclusively one in managing and one doing something else.
You did most of the bookkeeping, though, did you?
I did all the bookkeeping.
And
all the buying.
All the buying and what?
Collecting.
Mm-hmm. Did you have credit?
Oh, yes, we did. Maybe 65% of our business was credit, because our business was local. And we came out all right. We knew the people we were dealing with, and if they didn't pay, we didn't bother them. They'd eventually pay us. And when we quit in 75, I think we maybe had less than $500 that we threw away.
Good. That's very good, I think. Mm-hmm. And of course, you had other things to contend with, I suppose, sales tax and income tax and so forth.
In the later years, we had sales, we always had income tax, but sales tax came in later.
And did you use anyone to do your final okaying? Did you have any auditors or anything?
I did the tax work for a while, but then I got kind of tired of it, and so I'd take it up to a CPA and have him make out the income tax at the end of the year.
Now, what about you? You mentioned that this is You had a station, didn't you? And then
we had a station in a bulk plant.
And also, is that the same as a jobber?
Well, altogether, it's a jobber. Difference is, if you're a jobber, you buy direct from the oil company. If you're just a station, you buy from a jobber.
Oh, I see.
So you eliminate one. You increase your profit by that one step, by being a jobber rather than a dealer.
That's sort of like a wholesaler then, I suppose.
Yes.
Or distributor. Mm-hmm. They're the same, pretty much.
Pretty much, right.
Now, did you deliver to homes?
Fuel oil, yes. We had a big fuel oil business. Did real well at it.
And that was successful, huh?
Yeah. It's kind of we complain about the price of gasoline now. You know, it's really, gasoline was just underpriced for years and years. Mainly because competition. There's one on every corner, you know, and we'd cut each other's throat. But in 37, after teaching 3 years, I had enough money to buy a 37 Plymouth for $590 with a license on, see? And gas was selling for 22 cents. Well, buy that car today, it costs you $13,000. And you pay, about 90 cents today?
But for years,
gasoline didn't go up with the economy. You bought it for 21, 22, 23, 24. In fact, when we sold out in 75, I think the price of gasoline was about 49 cents.
Was that low in 75?
Yeah.
That's only 11 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Well, the pinch was just coming on, see? Mm-hmm. And 20 cents of that increase was made in about 6 or 7 months at that time when the crunch came on.
When I was teaching in Dilworth, I think I was getting 110 a month, and I think when I quit, I was getting 120. But what was kind of interesting now, and I think back at it, it was only the married men who had cars. None of the women had cars, and none of the single men. And here we were all teaching, and yet when we wanted to come to Fargo, we'd come by railroad usually, which is a little different from what youngsters or the young people have nowadays.
When I was in the 8th grade, the basketball team was going to play a tournament game at Ada. And we got a ride by car out to Watts Siding and took the train to Ada. You know, unbelievable.
Yes, it is. Things are different.
Yeah.
What were some of your problems now when you speak of help and so forth?
It was hard to get good help. It wasn't the most desirable job. Hours were long. When the war came on and we had government regulations, we locked it up on Sunday and locked it up at 6 o'clock at night. Never opened up again in those days. And we did just as well as when we were working 7 days a week, 15 hours a day.
People learned to.
They learned to buy it, and we were dependent on local people, and they would. They would fill up on Saturdays and Mondays, and they were real good to us.
Of course, that helps when you know your people, too. Now, your competition, you spoke about there was one station in every corner. What do they have now? You said something about superstations. What are superstations?
Well, there are a lot of big truck stops that get the large volume business. And I suppose you can just drive around more than see. You know, most of the stations have been torn down or converted into real estate office or some other such thing.
So these truck stops are doing a lot of business, I suppose.
The big stations are doing real well, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you got your supplies, you talked about, how did you get supplies?
Originally, you would call Tulsa, Oklahoma, and you'd get a tank car shipped from down there. It'd maybe take you, from the time you ordered it, it'd take 2 weeks. And then the pipeline went in at West Fargo, and it'd still take 2 weeks if we got it by tank car from West Fargo. The railroad was that slow in handling things. Well, we could pick up the phone and call Transport Inc. or Dan Dugan, and we'd have a tanker over there in 2 hours.
So the
railroads took themselves out of the gasoline business because they just didn't even when it's just coming from West Fargo, it'd take them a week, 10 days to get to you. Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's pretty slow.
Yeah.
Well, what about your fringe benefits? Do you want to talk a little bit about some fringe benefits?
There weren't many. We carried life insurance and health policies for our help. That was about it. A couple weeks we paid vacation a year.
And sick leave?
Whatever they needed. We never really had anyone that was sick for any long period of time, but nobody was ever docked.
How many employees did you have about?
Three. Usually had three.
Plus, including yourself.
Plus Bob and I, yeah.
Plus you and your brother. Now, what about World War II? What happened during World War II that was a problem to you?
Well, you had durationing, you know. The good part of it was they regulated your hours. And we cut our hours down and never went back to everybody else did. I guess we were the only station in the two towns that locked up Sundays permanently and never hurt us.
And you used
shortage of supplies, yes. At one incident, I couldn't get fuel oil, so I bought a tanker of kerosene, and I delivered it in 25-gallon lots to all of my customers to keep them going until I could get more number two fuel oil.
That was a good way of distribution, I think.
Well, you didn't have much choice. You know, usually you'd take 200 at a time, but you didn't have the product, so you spaced it out, and nobody ever ran out. So it worked all right.
What about, you used coupons then, didn't you? Was that what you used?
In rationing, yeah, you had gas coupons. You had A, B, and C, and it really wasn't a problem. Everybody had got gas and needed it.
Of course, they could borrow from their neighbors, too, right, I suppose,
sure.
If they needed it.
It's a real lax system. Somebody, your customer didn't have a coupon, you saw you got the gas.
Mm-hmm. When you were talking about the price of oil and gas, you were also talking about the Depression, how we suffered through the Depression. Excuse me. You mentioned something about your little grandchild was telling you something, and I thought that was kind of interesting. Tell about that little interview you had.
Oh, Craig is a sophomore, and he was supposed to interview someone about the Depression, so he picked me, and he came up, and I told him about weeding onions for Charlie Peterson for 10 cents an hour, and carrying papers, and the fact that most of the kids never got outside of Fargo, Moorhead, or Dilworth. You know, transportation wasn't there. You listened to a crystal radio set, and how if someone came over and you're going to be real good, you'd have a chicken dinner. That was the top, you know. And anyway, when I got through telling him all about how tough times were, he says, "Grandpa, did the things that you went through change your control, your thinking about money and how you spend it?" I says, "You're right." That's also why I could retire, Craig, I said.
I think that's so true.
I thought it was a real good question coming from him.
Yes, I do too. Yeah. And how old is he?
He'll be 16 this summer.
That was a very good question, I think. Certainly thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so true because I remember even myself, it was a problem. I hated to ask my dad for money for to go to the show, and I remember it was around 30 cents or something like that, and I thought that was quite a bit of money. When I was in high school, I remember that.
As hard as times were, I never asked my dad or mother for anything that I needed that they didn't give it to me. But I was real careful what I asked for. One example was when we won the state title in 29, we went to a national tournament in Chicago. And my dad gave me, when I got ready to go, he says, "If you can't go like everybody else, stay home." So he gave me a $20 bill. You know, I'd never had one in my life. I went to Chicago and I came home and I brought $17 back and gave it to him. Because I knew he didn't have another 20 at the time, I know. But my folks are real good to me, all of us.
Well, I remember when I was ready for college, of course it was during the Depression, mm-hmm. So I said, one day I said to my parents, I said, "You know, I'm going to get my job for work for my board and room." And my father said, "Oh, that's not going to be very good." And I said, "Yes, I'm going to do that." So we drove down. I went to school at Mayville, and we drove down there, and I said, we went to the registrar, and my dad wasn't very cooperative. He said, "You go in and talk to the registrar yourself." And he gave me a name, and I went over to this place. And my mother went in. My dad said, "Well, you better go in with her and see what kind of people she's getting into." So we went into this home, And we talked, my mother and I, and this lady, and she said, well, I have a girl that I'm kind of thinking of, but I think I will take you, she said. So if you want the you can come live with us and work for your board and room. So if you want it. So I said, yes, I was all set to go. School was starting in about 3 weeks. So when they brought me down the Sunday before school was to start, the last thing my dad said to me was, if it gets too tough, don't be afraid to quit. And I thought, oh no, I'm not going to quit. That was one of my best years of my life. I really enjoyed that. It was just like being home, see, with those people. So I don't think it hurts for these young people to work a little too, no, when they go to school. No. Now, I know you were very active in civic responsibilities.
Yes, from the time I came back in 37 to go in business, I had some civic job up until the time I quit business. So junior chamber, senior chamber, Lions Club, planning commission, volunteer fireman for 25 years, HRA board for 11 years, church council 2 terms, president of the congregation,
Trinity, one year,
12 years on the board of regents at Concordia College. They were great years, associated with Dr. Knudsen and Bill Smaby and those people. I was chairman of the board there for 8 years. So I had a full outside life.
Tell me a little bit about that Concordia, that Board of Regents. Yeah. I suppose it's like a board of directors.
That's right. We set policy and salaries and building or not to build, fundraising, tenure, anything that you would do running any other business.
And where did you?
We had some great people on that board that I don't want to mention names because I'd forget some I should, but there were a lot of great people.
But you had people from all over, didn't you?
We had millionaires and we had people that worked tough for their living just like I did.
And they were from North Dakota, Minnesota?
North Dakota, Minnesota, Montana. Mm-hmm. And one was Lawrenson, the president of the great Burlington.
Yeah, he's a Dilworth boy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know him and I know his sister too. Mm-hmm. What about that urban renewal? That was rather interesting too, I would think.
Yes, it was. We were asked to serve on the board, you know, and the city council made it official that we were going to go ahead, they voted on it to go ahead and go with urban renewal. And then after they got into it, you know, everybody was pointing fingers of things were wrong and so on and so forth. But we didn't bring it on. We were just wished on us to do it. And at the time that happened, the business community had grown old. It had been the same people that had been on Center Avenue all their life. And most of them hadn't put any money back into their businesses. And a lot of them, about just before urban renewal came in, had sold their businesses to younger people. And here we come in, and these younger people have bought these old businesses and try to get them to move into a new location and more expensive. And it was tough on some of them, but most of them made it. It worked out all right, didn't it?
I guess it's all right. It was a good thing it happened. At the time, it was a little hard to take, but I think as it worked out, it was all right.
I always said it was something like the senior high. You know, there was a group that was strongly opposed to building the senior high where it was built, you know. And after the thing was built and it was in actuality, they still were complaining about it 3 years later. You know, it's kind of silly.
Of course, you always find someone that's not going to be happy. That's right. What do you think of Morehead as a place of business? Do you think it's a good place for
business? Good business town, good place to live. You got Morehead State, Concordia, North Dakota State. You've got, you can go something every night if you wanted to. There's some program at one of these places. They're all good institutions. You have a medical center, which is maybe as close to Rochester as anything you'd find anywhere else. And the education payroll really pumps enough money into the economy to much better than a big factory would be.
Yes, I'm sure that there. Mm-hmm. You draw from Fargo, too, of course. Some, I suppose.
Oh, sure.
You have your colleges there.
Metropolitan area, and Have to include Fargo, Moorhead, Dilworth, West Fargo.
Do you think Moorhead will grow, or what do you think about that?
Well, it'll grow. I don't know how fast, but it'll grow.
I think it's grown quite a bit the last 10 years as far as population, hasn't it?
Yeah, see, it's gone from 5,000 to 30,000 in my span of time.
It was about 5,000 when you were growing up, huh?
Right.
That sounds very big. Now, do you want to tell us a little bit, first of all, tell us a little bit about your family. You met your wife at McIntosh, did you say?
I met her teaching. I always said all I got out of teaching was, not all, but the best I got out of teaching was my wife in the car. I taught 3 years and I had enough money to pay cash for a car. Well, I guess that'd be about the same now. You'd have a hard time saving at teaching school and buying a car in 3 years. And I married Florence Mork and Crookston in 1938. She was a wonderful person. I lost her to cancer in 84. We had a son and a daughter. Neither one ever gave us any trouble. Been real fortunate there. My daughter got her doctor's degree in Russian history from Berkeley, and my son got a doctor's degree from University of Iowa, physiology, but he decided he didn't want to work in a laboratory, so he is now assistant vice president of American Life and Casualty. It's a good job, likes it very much. My daughter is director of planning and policies for the Indiana State Higher Education Board, and she likes her work. She lives in Indianapolis. My son has wife, Janice, and she's a real capable person. She works for AgSCO. Have the two grandsons, Craig, 15, and Mike, who will be 11 the 4th of July. He's our firecracker.
This should be a pretty good town for those two to grow up.
Yeah, real healthy kids, both of them. We're lucky.
Yes, you are fortunate.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Then I had two brothers, two sisters. My oldest brother, even as hard time as times were, you know, my dad and mother put five of us through college, which is quite, you know, he didn't really have any money. He didn't make any big money. I suppose the best money he made was he was sheriff 4 years. And then I got into the oil business, and that was very good. The oldest brother, Kenny, he was a doctor, a surgeon, belonged to the American College of Surgeons, very successful. He died 5 years ago.
Where was he located?
He was in Bottineau, North Dakota, up until the 60s, and then he half-retired. He took a job in the health service at the University of Minnesota, because he wanted to get where he could go to places and see things. And his wife used to say he should back up and take his check, because he wasn't working that hard. My two sisters were in education all their life, Clara in Illinois and Helen in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin.
Were you mostly Concordia, I suppose, huh? Graduates, mostly Concordia graduates?
Four of us were. Clara graduated MS. Mm-hmm. Well, she did take a business course at Concordia first, and then she worked as a secretary for a couple of years to make money to go to MS. Eventually, she went on to Columbia and got her master's.
Now, I know that, I suppose you're kind of interested in, or do you want to say something more before we close? Have you got anything more that you'd like to add to this before we close it?
No, I think we've pretty well covered it.
Would you think that it'd be good for someone to go into oil station work or jobber work at the present time, or what do you think about that?
I think they're doing real well now. You know, the competition is, there have been so many stations weeded out that their margins are good, and they just don't give credit now because they can't carry it. But if you had a cash flow enough to to handle this high-priced fuel, oil, and gasoline, maybe you shouldn't work. Maybe you should have it on interest and let someone else work.
that might be a good idea.
That high-priced inventory, you know, where we could get by with $30,000-$35,000 inventory and maybe the same amount on the books. Today you'd maybe have to have $250,000.
That's
probably gets to be a big business. Even small business is big business now. The cost.
That's why it's difficult to start in for the young people to start in business right now.
Yes.
I do know that you meet some of your friends for coffee in the morning, and maybe you want to talk a little bit about your coffee friends. It's almost time for you to go for coffee.
We have anywhere from 4 to 12 of us meet every morning at the M&H and drink coffee. Lloyd Jereen and Pete, I played basketball with him in high school. And Cliff Nick, used to be from Dilworth, mm-hmm. good friend of Doc Fitzgerald's, who you talked about, who was a friend of mine. And Howard Ging, who was a retired block man for General Motors. Willie Rupert, who used to have Rupert's off sale. Wally Alderud, who used to be in the gasoline business, a competitor of mine, good friends. Erling Erickson, who worked for the Fargo Forum. Johnny Johnson, who was in real estate. John Kupich, who retired, used to be in business in Fargo. Ed Benedict, farmer. We got a pretty good cross-section there.
Yes, you do.
And it varies from day to day.
That must be interesting conversation.
You don't learn much, but it's entertaining.
You're solving the problems of the world, I suppose.
Yeah. But we have a good time.
What is it, what's located where your station was now? Is there anything there?
It's going to be torn down, I believe. It's just been sold again. And Hentges, developer from Fargo, is going to put up some small shops there, I guess. But the building is vacant right now.
I noticed that in the...
I noticed as I came by this morning that the shovel was in there getting ready to do some digging.
Always changes.
Yeah.
You had that location, did you say, for how long? From
1933
until 75.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty much a second home almost for you.
Right.
People.
It was a gathering place.
I'm sure a lot of people.
That was a lot like M&H is now. They'd stop in every day and visit.
Uh-huh. Which made it very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think you did a very, you covered it very well. And unless we have anything more to add to it.
No, I think that's about it.
And I'm sure the Heritage Commission will be happy to have this report for their future use. So thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you.